Hello, and welcome to Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. With Databook, we talk to healthcare leaders about technology, innovation, and the transformation of healthcare. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll get started in just a moment. In this episode, we talk with Christine Swisher, the Chief Scientific Officer at Project Ronin. The organization says it's on a mission to transform cancer care. Project Ronin offers a clinical intelligence platform to help providers make the best decisions about their patients. She talks about the need for more data and insights, artificial intelligence in healthcare, and how it can change the treatment of cancer. She also talks about what needs to be done to utilize AI in healthcare responsibly. It's a great discussion. Please join us. Well, thanks very much for joining us today. We are talking with Christine Swisher, the Chief Scientific Officer of Project Ronin. Christine, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Just as a place to start, why don't you talk a little bit about your background and the work that Project Ronin's doing?
Sure. So I'm Christine Swisher. I'm our Chief Scientific Officer here at Project Ronin. My background is all in healthcare, data science, machine learning, and AI, and how we can leverage that to improve patient outcomes, clinical efficiency, and do that in a way that's safe and ethical. So I've gone from idea to FDA clearance to post-product launch in the US and also in Europe, and other AI-based technologies that are not necessarily an FDA 510K, things like LDTs and things like that. So I'm so excited to be here today.
Well, thanks so much. Have you always been passionate about data? Has that just been a long passion of yours, or is that something that's developed at a later stage in life?
So it actually started in oncology. I wanted to make an impact for cancer patients. And, you know, as I was exploring different options early in my education, it really was clear that computer science was my strength. And so that's how I came to this career. I would say I could not be happier with it because of the momentum in AI. I think I get to be part of a transformation in healthcare. And there's been a couple of them in my career, but right now is a very exciting time and a very important time to be a part of healthcare AI.
I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit more about Project Ronin's mission for those that just aren't as familiar with Project Ronin. Just talk about sure. Your mission and sort of how you're hoping to change healthcare for the better.
Yeah. So I think the first thing to know about Project Ronin is we're on a mission to transform how care is delivered. And we're starting with cancer. Cancer is one of the most complex diseases, huge unmet need, and a really deep need for personalization. And so what we are delivering is a clinical intelligence platform that brings all of the data about a patient, provides a comprehensive patient view so that clinicians can make the best decision about that patient. In addition, we also bring in what's happening to the patient outside of the home and empower that patient with knowledge. So if, let's say they have nausea, how can they best mitigate that symptom? How can they care for themselves? Giving them that education in the moment that they need it. So we bring in what's happening outside of the hospital system, which most of our lives are outside of the hospital system, right? And so bringing that information to clinical decision-making is super important. And then in addition to that at-a-glance total patient understanding, what we're building next is the ability to glean insights from that data. So with that total patient understanding and comparing them to their peers in at a population level, we can make better predictions about what might happen to that patient such that we can make better actions to improve their outcomes.
It's really interesting when you talk about the need for more personalization of data, because cancer has been studied for a long time. You know, to somebody who's a non-scientist, me, you would assume we'd have just volumes and volumes of data, and we do. But as I talk to other folks like you, there's clearly a need for a lot more data and a lot more individualized data.
Completely. I think there's also just because we have access to data doesn't mean it's computable, right? And or it's easily accessed by the clinical care team. So we've heard some anecdotal reports of taking over 30 minutes to prepare for an appointment for a single oncology visit. It's a lot of time that could be spent with that patient. So and that all of that clicking you could have at a glance. So making that data computable is super important, and also rendered for that particular, the end user, whether it's a physician, a nurse, or a patient, in a way that they can understand, to conceptualize in a way that's for them. So that's actually a huge amount of work that's often not appreciated, how big that really is. We need to use clinical informatics, generative AI, things like large language models, to be able to make sense of all that data to achieve that task.
It was really interesting when you were talking about the amount of time that a clinician will spend looking at the patient's information before actually being with the patient. We have electronic health records, we have a lot of technology, and yet so much of that's not necessarily making life easier for clinicians. So how do we make it easier for clinicians to get information in a way that they can use it relatively quickly so they can have maybe that extra 10 or 15 minutes with patients?
Yeah, I think that, you know, as we digitize the electronic medical record, that was step one. But I think that, you know, during that time, we thought that we would, you know, skip all the way to stage four. So if you think about the four stages of health IT, it's digitizing the record, connecting all the parts, the care providers to the hospitals, and patient-facing systems to enterprise systems. The third part is gleaning meaningful insights from that data. And then fourth, of course, is using those insights to drive and improve action, to drive action that improves value. And so I think when we thought, oh, we digitized it, we would automatically get to step four or stage four. But that's not what happened. It's a ton of work to get there. And this data is messy. It's unstructured, untaxonomized, not normalized. When I say unstructured, I mean it's buried in a PDF that's three or four clicks away. And so first, we have to get all that data together, understand a patient. Then we have to build predictive models that are validated, both in offline validations in terms of usability, effectiveness, and from an ethical review, and then get them to the point of validation on impact. And so all of that needs to happen such that we can deliver those insights and drive action.
Yeah, and you'd sort of understand why people might think you'd go from step one to step four, because, hey, it's all in the record, so it's going to be easier. And then, oh, and so you hear from other clinicians talk about, you know, working in pajama time doing their documentation, and, you know, just the amount of time they're spending on records. It's even a leading contributor to burnout, according to many physicians and many experts who are studying it. So how do you reduce the burnout with technology that's supposed to be making life easier for folks?
Yeah, I think it's thoughtful user design. Certainly, there's a lot of momentum in the generative AI space where it's being used to maximize our potential, prioritize care, increase productivity. That's where the first tranche of generative AI technologies. I think the next frontier will be to take all those large swaths of data and medical literature and convert these into insights that are at the point of care. And this really would reduce the cognitive load as well by having all that data analyzed and presented. And here's the meaningful insights for your particular patients. So
you're talking about AI, and it's such a hot topic everywhere. Time Magazine is a giant cover story, and it came out about a week or so ago. How do you see AI changing cancer care?
Yeah, I think, well, in a lot of ways, I think that it can touch all four quadrants of the quad aim. So in terms of population health outcomes, there's huge potential. In fact, AI already has impacted all four of these quadrants, but now the scale of that is just increased. there's certainly, I think, like I said, the first tranche of these generative AI applications are really centered around productivity. And so I think like clinical well-being and clinical efficiency will be highly impacted. Patient experience is one that we shouldn't forget because it's so important. as well. And that's something that we're really passionate about at Ronin, because we do have this patient engagement application, and we really are, you know, sort of a mission-driven company that wants to empower those patients as well. And of course, one of the other thing that I think is also really important is in terms of cost, things like preventing avoidable acute care visits like hospitalizations and emergency department visits is something that we've spent a lot of time on and are quite proud of our progress there.
And that's obviously huge in terms of, I mean, these can be normally enormously expensive for patients and their families. So
that's right. And I personally do not like visiting the emergency department. I don't think anyone does. For cancer patients, it's also not the best place for them to get care. They're immunocompromised. So it's really something that we want to avoid for them. In fact, 53% of emergency department visits are avoidable for cancer patients.
Wow, that's a huge number. I was wondering if you talk more about, because obviously you mentioned the patient experience is a really big part of what you do. Could you just talk a little bit more about that and what you're doing to kind of focus on improving that patient experience?
Sure. Yeah. So what we're doing is we have a mobile application that patients can leverage that asks them questions about what they're experiencing while on active treatment. And this allows us to detect and know when a patient is experiencing severe side effects like shortness of breath, or even things that might not be an emergency, but really require their care team to maybe give them a call or schedule an appointment. And so what we do is we bring that information from what's happening to them at the home directly into the clinician's workflow in a way that they can respond to that more quickly. And it's been shown that better symptom management can improve a number of things: quality of life, health-related quality of life. It can improve time on treatment, so their success, how likely they are to be able to stay on that chemotherapy, to stay on their regimen, has a lot to do with how well their symptoms are managed. And the last thing is, when one of the things that's really a big challenge for cancer patients is management of pain. And so by providing that information that your patient's in pain, you can keep them out of the emergency department as well. So a lot of benefits.
It struck me as my wife is a breast cancer survivor. She's 13 years ago, she had a pretty serious bout, but she's still here and is doing great. But it's a very obviously just life-changing event. And there's just so much you go through that you never anticipate before. Everything from, like, sort of, you know, having a little bit of foggy memory with chemo to, you know, just changes in appetite or food aversions that you never would have anticipated before. So I just think some of those patient engagement mechanisms we talk about would be very helpful to a patient that's, like, kind of wondering, why is this happening? What's going on? And being able to get information quickly would be probably very reassuring to the patient and also the patient's family, who is wondering what's going on too.
Right. And so I think that's why giving education in the moment that it's needed. So by knowing that, oh, you have nausea, well, there's some approaches that you can take to better manage that. Here's what to expect. Like, giving that information to a patient and their caregivers in the moment that they need it is so important. The other thing is, you know, when a patient comes in to talk to their provider, they may be nervous. Maybe they have a recency bias. They remember what happened in the last couple of days, but not the last week or two. And so by having them report in the moment at a regular cadence while they're at home, you're going to get better understanding of what's actually happening to this patient. So I think it's really an empowering platform.
Is part of the work you're doing, do you see it as improving health equity? Because it's such a huge topic now in terms of closing disparities in healthcare. Do you see that as part of the mission as well?
Definitely. I think that one is the user experience that we provide is really delivered in a way that is accessible to all of the patients that we intend to serve. From a machine learning side, we focus a lot on sort of a three-pronged approach to ensure that we are providing all protections against bias. So at first, we do a validation and try to prevent all foreseeable biases with having representative data in our sample set. and with high quality human-centered design that really thinks about how do we make sure this will serve the patients that we intend to serve. And then once something's in production, then okay, so we have our I think that that one is like the break. You prevent the incident, but if there is something, we still have a seatbelt and an airbag. And so this is a diagnosis and correction. So we have systems to detect underperforming algorithms that may be biased, and then systems to rapidly mitigate any of those potential unforeseen issues. And that's sort of our approach to preventing bias, but also also ensuring safety.
And that's the whole idea of algorithms that have may reflect biases in the past has gotten more and more attention. So that's interesting that that's a safeguard that you're looking at as well.
Yeah. It's I think so important. It's more than just having representative data. That's about the whole AI experience and having systems in place.
I've been at a couple conferences this year, and one recurring theme has been designing technology solutions that work for patients, but that also work for the clinicians as well. So is that something that's also a big focus in terms of making this experience, not just working for the patient, but also reducing some headaches for the clinician as well?
100%. I think that is what makes our job challenge. One of the things that makes our job challenging is that really to make the impact that we aim to make, we need to improve the patient's experience. We need to improve the clinician's experience, right? So if something is hard for clinicians to use, it's not going to be adopted, and therefore you don't have an impact. You don't get to help those patients. You don't get to create the value that you intend. So that is actually like required for success, but also super important as well. And so we do a lot of user research on what will resonate, what will really create value for the patient. What are the most important, like what we call the 10x pain points that we can solve for the clinicians, for the nurse, for different personas, for the nursing, maybe for the for triage, for the providers as well, and also administrators. So we have to think about all of these different stakeholders that are interacting with our clinical intelligence platform and how we can best serve them.
Sounds like a great goal. Sounds like it's also a very complex as well.
That's hard, but it's the right way.
You talked before about AI is already impacting a lot of healthcare. What do you think needs to happen for it to be even more broadly used in patient care?
Yeah, I think that we have to achieve a couple things. One is that we need to have standards and methodologies for non-AI developers or practitioners to evaluate the performance and quality of these tools. And so I think that's one thing that we really need to do better as an industry. That said, there is enormous progress in that space. So there's three seminal documents that came out in 2023, the White House came out with their blueprint for an AI Bill of Rights. National Institute of Science and Technology came out with their risk management framework for AI. And the Coalition of Health came out with trustworthy AI for healthcare. And what they outlined are these five principles: fair with harmful bias mitigated, privacy enhanced and secure and resilient, safe, usable, and then transparent. And so if we can achieve all five of those goals and we provide education and standards such that those that are using this technology can properly vet the technology, we're going to be successful.
Does anything about the development of AI and its growing use make you nervous about the future?
I think that it is a powerful technology that when used naively can cause harm. So if we don't think about having these systems and we don't have the standards and best practices well-defined beyond principles, concrete steps, then things like bias can become automated and invisible. And so it is really important. I think this is like I said, a pivotal time in the healthcare and AI industry for us to do it the right way, set the standards and best practices. And so that is, I think, the challenge that we need to rise to. I will say that the healthcare industry is a risk adverse, high quality type of industry. So we are well posed to rise to this challenge. And I think that if we, you know, keep our eyes on the prize in terms of solving the right problems, that we have involvement of subject matter experts like providers and nurses and patients, and that we define meaningful evaluation metrics, not abstract things like AUC and F1 score, that don't have real meaning in the real world. Things like reducing emergency department visits, mortality, keeping patients on their treatment so they'll be more successful longer. Those types of metrics, if we can stay focused on those, then we'll be successful.
You still seem like you're very enthused about the prospects of AI and continue to transform healthcare.
I am. I always think that the patients are waiting. There's patients that are suffering right now, and we have technology that could really help them. And we have a healthcare system that stands so much to gain. And so I'm enthusiastic about it. I definitely think that there is a need for research in transparency, research in bias mitigation, research in best practices and how we best deliver education to stakeholders that are non-AI practitioners. However, I don't think that we should stop. I think we just need to invest in those areas in addition to bring this technology forward, because there's so much to gain.
As you've talked about the patients you're serving, cancer patients, does that give you a greater sense of mission and what you're doing? Because, I mean, you're obviously serving patients facing some of the most serious illnesses imaginable. And that's something you've mentioned is kind of a recurring theme in the interview. Just does that give you like an extra sense of drive or purpose in terms of making solutions even better?
100%. I think at Project Ronin, there so much of our team is here for the why, inspired by our mission. And I've worked in healthcare my whole career. And when I joined Ronin, it was so obvious that this was a place where I could really improve the lives of cancer patients patients in general in a way, in a very significant and very meaningful way. And in addition, we also touch the other three quadrants of the quadruple aim, but it's really a special place.
So I know we're starting to get towards the end of our window here. What are some other takeaways you'd like our audience to understand about Project Ronin and the work you're doing and maybe the work that you hope to be doing in the future?
Right. Well, I think that we're really focused on this transformation of how care is delivered, going past just digitizing the record, but really gleaning the meaningful insights that'll drive action. And to do that, we're building trustworthy, ethical, safe AI and clinical intelligence platforms that help clinicians to better understand their patients quickly and also empower the patient with knowledge. So
what's the best feedback you get from clinicians as they use this and as they're able to see this informational laser? Like what's the feedback that's like make you feel like, oh, we're really getting somewhere?
Well, I don't think we've ever had an oncologist who, when they look at our like at a glance longitudinal timeline view, I don't think we've ever had a clinician say, oh, I don't need this. They always say, oh my gosh, this is great. When can I have it? Right. And that's how you know that you're in the right place.
Okay. Well, hey, thanks so much for taking some time today. Really appreciate this conversation. Really enjoyed the conversation as well, but look forward to seeing more of what Project Ronin does in the future.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor to be here.
Thank you for listening to Databook, a podcast by Chief Healthcare Executive, a brand of MJH Life Sciences. You can subscribe to Databook wherever you get your podcasts. For latest news, insights, and analysis of the healthcare industry, visit chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and X, the platform formerly known as Twitter. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Take care.